the Pharisees asked to eat with him. And he went to the Pharisee's house and took his place at the table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment, and standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and wiped them with the hair of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner." Now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and there was a woman who had had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your disability." And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day." I read this to set up what I want to read here in Luke 15. And why it is that when we get to Luke 15, Jesus at this point feels the need to tell these parables. Because it says there, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' What man of you, having 100 sheep, he said, I'm telling you this parable for this reason. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." And he said, "There was a man who had 2 sons. And the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. He was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came, he drew near to the house. He heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. This story does not exist in isolation. Jesus didn't go through Galilee and Judea teaching the gospel of the kingdom of God and encountering various people who were happy to see him and hear his message, including religious people who were waiting to hear this message of Jesus, who were receptive and then did the things that he said, and then somewhere along the way decided he was going to tell the parable of the lost son. Now, as I indicated through reading the earlier sections of Luke, the reason for this parable is really because the concept has been building up over time. And through various interactions with the Pharisees and with the scribes, and Jesus knowing their thoughts at times, or them revealing their thoughts to him at other times, Jesus knows what is most needed in this moment for them. And when the sinners, the tax collectors, when these people are coming to him, he's sitting with them, and he is eating with them. The leaders of the people, the Pharisees and the scribes, they're grumbling to themselves. How could he sit and eat with these people, these sinners? So the text tells us he told them this parable. He actually tells them three parables, and they all have their own distinct qualities to them. I really think that the first parable is more about tenderness. We see this picture of a shepherd, and a picture they would have been very familiar with, but I think we can still grasp it. This shepherd who, this property is important to him. They're vital for life, but he also cares about them. He likely has named all of them, as farmers tend to do with their livestock, with their animals. And one of them now has gone missing. And we see the value that is placed on this lost sheep, that he'll leave the others, the ones who aren't at risk here, and now he'll go and he'll seek out the one that is lost. And not only that, he'll pick up that sheep and he'll put it on his shoulders and he'll bring it back, rejoicing. The second one seems rather simple as well. It is the diligence of looking for that which is valuable. It wasn't too long ago I remember hearing a story about an elderly lady. I can't remember if it was here or somewhere else. Don't remember that much about it. But I do remember somehow she had cashed her Social Security check and she had left it at a restaurant somewhere. It was in an envelope and she placed it on the seat next to her and she forgot it was there and she walked out. And fortunately for her, there was an upstanding citizen of her community that came in after her that found that envelope. And that's all she had to live on the rest of the month. You can imagine how valuable that would have been to her to find that. And how distraught she was as she got home and realized she didn't have the envelope and then began the process of trying to figure out where it was. That's much the example that Jesus is bringing out here in really kind of these plain types of illustrations. And I think he goes beyond that here in the last one we're going to talk about. But it's just this woman, she's misplaced a coin, a valuable possession of hers. And so she's going to dig and she's going to sweep and she's going to clean the house. She's going to do everything she can. She's going to use great diligence to find this thing of great value that matters to her. But I would suggest the third story is the pinnacle of the other two. For the very reason that as important as animals may be and as important as money might be for our sustenance, there's nothing more important than human relationships. And Jesus has merely told these first two parables to lead him into this last one. One in which there's no doubt going to be emotional reactions from everyone involved. In fact, as I read through this story, I would think most, if not all of us, connect to it in some way. Because that is the depth of the parable of the lost son, beyond the other two. We have all known someone who has gone astray. We have gone astray at some point. We have tried to reach out to someone who is lost. Maybe we've been a parent who's reached out to a child. Maybe we've been that child who's come back and reached back to the parents. That there's been some kind of situation in our lives that mimics something in this story in some way, and so it's much more personal to us. And when I began to read that section, you felt that. Much more than the sheep and the coin. And what this parable talks about and some of the themes that we see in this are things like rebellion and brokenness, desperation, compassion, and bitterness. We aren't going to find those about the sheep. We aren't going to find those with the coin. But we do in these illustrations that involve human relationships, because they matter so much more. They're so much more important to us. And Jesus saves this to the end to illustrate the point he really wants to make to these grumbling Pharisees and scribes, who when he goes and he's reaching out to those who are lost, and he wants to give the message to them, and he wants them to be healed as he did some of these others in the previous stories, like the man on the Sabbath, or this woman on the Sabbath that we read about in chapter 13, just before the man in chapter 14. And he is rejected by the leaders for whatever reasons they could come up with, because they're looking to find fault in some way. He's wanting to bring healing to these people, and all the Pharisees can do is grumble, saying this man receives sinners and eats with them. And so Jesus tells this parable really to highlight their sin, the evilness of their hearts. Despite them seeing themselves as being righteous and holy in a good relationship with God, in a good relationship with the Father, what he wants to demonstrate to them is that they're no better than the ones they look down on as being lost, and that they are just as much peril as these tax collectors and sinners because of the attitude of their heart. This morning, I want us to look at just really five simple lessons that we can get from the prodigal. Some of these you may have considered before. Some of them you may not have considered. I came across an article quite some time ago now by D. Bowman, in which I think I got the substance of these five lessons. And really interesting thoughts that he brings out when looking at the parable of the lost son. And what I really intend for this to be is both warning for us and also hope. As we look at the story of the lost son, I think there is a great message of hope in this story. But there are also warnings along the way, something for all of us to think about, to consider, to realize temptations are there and problems can come about in our life. And I'll start with what is really the most basic, probably what you have considered, whether it's in these terms or not, the reality that the world just messes people up. And particularly for our young people who are beginning to find their way in the world and they're starting to make their own path and go their own direction, as they're starting to form their own thoughts and decide which way they want to go in life, I want them to understand what this parable tells us. And it's not something that we don't know from other things in life, but it is a message Jesus wants us to see in the parable of the lost son. And that is that the far country where the dazzling lights are, where everything looks so wonderful, where the signs are pointing with the neon lights and everything looks so fun, that messes people up. It leaves them destroyed in life. They think it's going to be so fun and great, and there's so many promises that they're given about how wonderful it's going to be, how good it's going to feel, but it leaves disaster in its wake. Whether it is destroyed relationships, whether it is the loss of money or friends or family, or whether the self-esteem is destroyed as someone who once was confident, once who felt good about who they were, now they go into the world, they think this is going to be so wonderful, and they come out the other side not thinking much of themselves. That is what the world does to people. It eats people up and spits them out. And I really don't even have to give very many illustrations for that, I don't believe, because we've witnessed this so many times. Where people get caught up in the dazzling lights and they want to get away from what they know. There's something so much better over here on this other hill, and I'm going to journey far away to this far country, and it's going to be so much better than my father's house. It's going to be so much greater than what I have here. And of course, they get there. And what we find with the prodigal is all he wants to do is get back. Now, our society is a little different. And so I want to say it's perfectly fine to have ambition and have dreams, things that might, in a very literal way, take you from your father's house. And that's not what I'm talking about. This society, we can tell, these two boys, even in the illustration Jesus is giving here, that the plan is for them to live with their father, to work the fields, to grow the family business, basically. They're going to take this over, and that's going to be their livelihood. But this boy wants out. He wants nothing to do with what his father has. He's rebelling against him. He wants something better, something different. And so in deception, he goes off into an unknown world that seems to have so much promise. And what he finds out is that sin is just ugly. And that when he gets in a bad situation, he squanders his wealth. He's reckless, as so many young people are. But the reality is, when he is in the far country and he squanders and he's reckless, there's no one there who cares. And once he finds himself feeding the pigs, wishing he could eat what they're eating, he's finally figured that out. Now I want us to, again, stop for a minute and just understand some things about life. When we're with our parents, young people, or we're with people who care about us, there are going to be times we mess up. There are going to be times we sin, we rebel, we make bad decisions. That happens to us. But the reality is, when we're in the midst of our father's home, whether literally or figuratively, however you want to take that, there are people who care. There are people here this morning. If you find yourself there right now, you realize you've been living in rebellion. You realize you've made some bad decisions. There are people here this morning who want to help, who care about you, who want to help bring you back to the Father's house, who want good for you. But the reality is, and what Jesus is pointing out in this story about the parable of the lost son is, if you are in the world does not care. That's just simple reality. The world exists for its own good. And I don't mean to indicate there that there's not good people in the world or people who do good things. That's probably the better way to say it. Because there are. All of us have neighbors, or we have people we're acquainted with at work who are good people, who make good decisions, who relatively in their life stand up for good moral things even at times. There are some who will even help us out to some degree, but the reality is the world is in it for itself. And when this boy goes off and he leaves his father's home and he goes into this far country and he squanders his wealth with prostitutes and with others, if his brother's right at least, he's spending all of his money and he has all kinds of things and people to spend it with. When he has nothing, he also has no one. He was longing to be fed, it says in verse 16, with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. No one was interested in helping him at that point. And it is at this lowest point that he realized what he really needs is to come back where people care. It's to come back to the people who really do love him and do want to help him. And unfortunately, for some of us, in the decisions we make, we learn these lessons in the hardest ways at times. I imagine in Jewish life in the first century, in which Jesus is dealing with, that this is a reality. I don't think he's just pulling the story out of thin air. Just like in our world, we have these types of things that happen. I think they've seen this. They know what this looks like. And they know what it is when someone hits rock bottom, which is what we're seeing here in the parable of the lost son. This boy has hit rock bottom. There's nowhere else for him to go. And finally he realizes, and maybe this is an important point to make too, he actually does realize this is not fake. It's not just he feels guilty or finally he's caught or anything like that. No, he actually realizes, and sometimes it does take realizing our state to figure this out. But the boy realizes he knows where he needs to go. And maybe parents, that's something that's hopeful for us. If our children are struggling, we don't like the decisions that they're making, maybe we can at least have hope in the reality that they know where to go when they come to themselves. But the reality is, this is not actually Jesus' main point. Yes, the world is reckless The world does not care. There's all those realities that we hear so often. They're not going to give you what you need. But the true point of the story is actually what comes toward the end. And that is that the boy who stays home is actually just as lost as the boy who left. Now, he's gone through the right motions, and he seems to have said the right things along the way. And that goes to the nature of sort of how this works. We can show up for services, and we can go to the devotions, and we can show up for singings, and we can say all the right statements. We can say, Lord willing, and God bless you, and all those rites of those kinds of things, but really, maybe they don't mean much to us. And here's what I want us to see about this. This is what Jesus wanted them to see. In some ways, it can be even much more dangerous, because here's the reality. The prodigal son is obvious. To some extent, he knows where he is, even if he hasn't fully come to himself. He hasn't deceived himself by making himself think he says the right things and he goes to the right places, and so he must be okay. He knows that's not true. On the other hand, the boy who has stayed home yet is equally lost is very deceived about where he is, it seems. His motives are off. He's harboring bitterness. We find out by the end of the story he's also unforgiving. And the problem with all of this is it's not something that you can walk up and see in somebody. You can't walk up to me and say, well, he's unforgiving. I can just tell. I mean, look at him. He's so bitter. We can't see that. Now, maybe we can see it demonstrated through actions, which is what we're seeing in the story as it plays out. But one of the problems of what Jesus is trying to demonstrate is that this is exactly what the scribes and Pharisees are all about. That they harbor bitterness and resentment. They're unforgiving. They have bad motives. And yet they hold themselves as being so holy and righteous before God. And they look down upon these tax collectors and sinners who seem to probably don't have the right answers about what they ought to be doing. That's why they're seeking Jesus out. But at least it seems their heart is geared toward doing what's right, even if they haven't figured out all the right motions yet. And one of the disturbing things about this story, if we're honest with ourselves, is that the greater danger for most of us is the problem of the older son. Now, I understand that any one of us can be tempted by the world. We can be deluded into thinking some of our decisions are fine and okay, even though they're very worldly. And so I understand that. But we can also, and I think more easily, be deceived to be like these Pharisees and scribes. To look at those who are struggling and look down on them and think about how much better we are than they are. To not be very receptive when they make efforts to come back. Sometimes maybe we expect more than is realistic. Someone who has been struggling in all kinds of areas in their life, and they want to make it right. They want to make known that they want changes. And so maybe we have these issues, well, if they should have done it a different way. Or maybe they didn't say the right words when they offered their repentance. Or if they just really knew what that person was like, and they would know this isn't real. Remember the woman of the city who comes and cries at Jesus' feet and wipes them with her tears? If Jesus only knew, he can't be a prophet. If he only knew who this woman was, the Pharisee says. Or what about the ruler of the synagogue? There are 6 days to heal. Why are you spending the Sabbath healing this person? Don't you know, Jesus, there's a better way to do this. Don't you know, person with a disability, there's a better way to take care of this healing. Don't you know, person who has spiritual problems and difficulties, you know, that's not the right way to go about finding help. You're just looking for attention. Or you're just guilty. You were caught, and so that's why you're coming forward to make some kind of statement. That's all it is. These stories are convicting. If we're honest. Maybe you are a better person than I am. I hope you are. But I'll tell you this, when I read through these stories and I think about what Jesus says, and these, I didn't read you what Jesus said to the man in Luke 7, or to the man in Luke 13 who he calls a hypocrite. But when I read those stories and I think about what the implications are from those, the reality is I've seen myself in those situations before. And I'm not saying we have to be naive and we can't look at reality and look at how things have happened. So I'm not denying that. He does tell us to be wise. But I am saying we need to be careful about our attitude, because that's the exact point he's trying to make about this older son in Luke 15. And maybe part of this is he really has no idea what's actually happening. Have you ever found yourself in that situation before? You hear about something that's happened. Maybe you know about someone's problems or the sin they've had in their life, and maybe you hear they've been restored. And maybe you don't know much else about it except for that, and yet you have skepticism in your mind, or you harbor doubts, or maybe some bitterness that they could do the things they did and now they're coming back and everything is going to be okay. And how can that be the case? This is the way men think. This is the way the world works, in fact. But in the kingdom of God, it is not supposed to be this way, and that's why we have this parable, that we can see the reaction of the father, how he reacts to the son who has come back. But it's interesting to me, the older son, he's really clueless about most of this. In fact, as we read the story carefully, he has to ask the servant what's happening. He has no idea. He just hears a lot of noise and celebration, but he doesn't actually know what's occurring. But as soon as he hears it's about his younger son, he already knows it's bad and evil and wrong. How could my father let this happen? He hasn't heard anything about the exchange between the father and the son. He knows nothing about the younger son's heart and the story of what's happened. He hasn't seen the younger son yet. He doesn't know anything about it yet. He's already made judgments about how he feels about his younger son coming back, the younger son coming back. And then just the unloving nature and character of the older son's attitude in general. His brother has been gone for who knows how long, and yet the only thing he can do when his brother comes back is be bitter and angry and hateful. Now again, we need to stop and think about reality for a moment. The older son was hurt by the younger son's behavior, there's no doubt, just like the father was. And we can all understand, I believe, to some extent, why you would have some of these feelings. He's left his older brother to do most of the work. He's going to get most of the reward as well in a material way. But he's ditched his father. He's ditched his brother. In a very literal way, he's gone away. Maybe it is some of us have experienced that in a somewhat more figurative way. Maybe our family member, relative is still close by, but they have departed the faith. Or they don't want to have much to do with the family, or whatever the scenario is. And that causes problems. It causes the emotions to run wild. It causes difficulty between the family. Sometimes it causes difficulty between other people in the family, and that causes difficulty for you because you see that happening. And what I'm trying to get us to understand here is there are real emotions and things that take place in this scenario. And so before we criticize the older brother too harshly, we should at least understand that this is a reality. But in the kingdom, this reality needs to be acted on in a very different way than it is in the world. And what we see from the Father is that reality being played out. He welcomes him with open arms. He's ready to receive him. And although the actions and the attitude of the young man, his older son, are somewhat more hidden until things get shaken up a little bit, now it is revealed that he has bitterness and hate and anger. And when it comes to sin and our relationship to the Father, however grave we may imagine various sins to be over other sins, the reality is the sin still is there and exists. And it is a barrier. And the older son is the Pharisees. He is the scribes. He is the exact people that Jesus is telling this parable for. So I think there is great warning in there for us. That the children who stay home aren't always good either. Even though maybe it's not so obvious. Another point I see in this story, one that Brother Bowman brought out that I think is accurate to think about, is just the reality that good families can have bad children. Not a really good way to make that statement, and that's why I have the quotation marks there. Bad and good, in some senses, are relative. If we're talking about the kingdom, then bad is anyone who doesn't live kingdom principles. But as we've demonstrated earlier, we talk about people who are our neighbors or our friends who may not be interested in God at all, but do good things as we describe them. And so what I'm talking about here in some extent is just being ungodly or not interested in godly things. And what we see here with this man, with this father, who in a sense represents God, if we take this parable to its ultimate conclusion, what we see from this is that the two sons are bad. They make poor choices. They do things that are not right. We see this on a daily basis in some senses when our kids are little. Where I am right now with my children, we tell them, don't do this, and they do it. And there has to be discipline, there has to be training. And as it is in life, I am assuming that when my children get older, they'll probably do some things I don't like. Maybe sometimes things I don't like to the extent I feel like I have to tell them I don't like it. Hopefully, not things that are ungodly or demonstrate a lack of faith in God. But what we see from Scripture is just the very reality that God is the father, for instance, of Israel, and yet Israel turns from him time and time again. And so as I'm saying, this is a message of warning, but it's also a message of hope. That sometimes we are so harsh on ourselves. And this does not mean that we shouldn't be trying to instill good values and discipline and train, or that we shouldn't be putting effort into doing that better. Certainly we should as parents. But it is just the reality that every person has their own choice, that we are all human, and sometimes I make mistakes as a father, and sometimes, unfortunately, those mistakes are going to have implications on my children. But the reality is we have to teach our children that it is their choice. It doesn't matter how righteous the parent is, how good the father or the mother might be, how faithful or how trusting in God or however else we want to phrase it, that doesn't matter. It comes down to the choice of the child. And young people, this is your decision. Your parents may be faithful, good, righteous people, but it is still your choice to make the decision to follow God. And there's nothing they can do to make you do that. It comes down to you making that choice. And this father, as he divides the inheritance and his son runs away to the far country, in a sense, there's nothing he can do about that. Now he sits and he waits for his child to come home. And the other reality is that bad children don't always stay bad. In this story, the child returns. And stories that you know about, the child has returned. And sometimes it takes these hard lessons to get through to some people, whether it's a child or an adult. Sometimes we have to see what the world is really like. And I'm not commending that path. Like Randy talked about in some of his discussion this morning in Bible class, some of the things we think about maybe aren't what we recommend, but it's just reality. This is what happens to some people. They go down paths that bring about hard lessons. And so as I've said a few times already, in a sense, this is a message of hope. Sometimes we can't see that God's way is best until we experience what it's like to not be doing things God's way. And it takes those difficult, sometimes painful lessons to understand what is really better for us. When I was younger, I was a catcher on my high school baseball team. And when I was a junior, as young people tend to do, they don't think about some of the risks and things that they're doing. And I just always, in warm-ups before the game, just threw my mask off and didn't wear it. and you already know where this is going, had a right fielder that had a great arm. Last person off the field, coach hits the ball out there. We're about to start the game. He throws the ball in. It hits the lip of the grass and the dirt, shoots straight up and hits me in the eye. That was a hard lesson. But I never took my mask off in warm-ups ever again. Sometimes that's what life is like. We fall hard, and then we realize what's most important. We realize what we really need. And again, I don't commend any of you young people, if you're a catcher, don't go throw your mask off and try to experience that. It's not going to feel real good. That's not what we want to have happen. But the reality is when we see that, when it happens in our life, what we need to understand what is best, that our decision was not the right decision. And all the rest of us who are here thinking about all of this and considering all this, and we know people who are lost, we know people who are in the world, the other message here in the story of the lost son is to never give up. To keep praying. To keep reaching out. To keep looking. And what I want us to get from this story in general, whether it's the story of the lost sheep or the coin or the lost son, that often, that over and over again in this story, the point that is emphasized is the joy, the celebration that takes place when one is found. We have to learn to embrace the joy of restoration. And this is central to the point that Jesus is making here in the parable itself. When the young son comes home and the elder son is upset and angry and isn't rejoicing and isn't celebrating with everyone else, but stands aloof and expresses his bitterness and his anger. What I want to say this morning is if you are here for healing, we welcome you. That is what this is about. It is to encourage, to uplift. That is one of the major reasons why we come together on a regular basis. And I think in God's wisdom, he has told us to come together on a regular basis. It is to honor him, and it is to glorify him and to worship him. But it is also for healing to whatever degree we need it. We need to be here, and we need to experience that healing. And it might be for you right now that you realize you desperately need healing. That you have been way off from the Father's home. And now you want to come back. And I want the rest of us to listen to this and think about maybe the hesitation that people sometimes have because of the older brother syndrome. That it's hard for people who are trying to change, who want to change, when they experience or they see someone come and they get some kind of demonstration of appreciation or love, but then as they go through their life, they're kind of forgotten or neglected. They come and they're restored, and somehow we think that magically the problems are gone and that everything's going to be okay, and we hold them to those expectations, and when they fall again, we say, well, there they go. They're having those same problems again. I knew it was going to happen. Embrace the joy of restoration. Unconditionally. When we see the younger son or daughter come back, and to whatever extent they realize they need help, we need to embrace that and rejoice in it and celebrate that. We can't force them to make any decision, but when they have made it known they want to make it right, time to lift them up and carry them on our shoulders like that lost sheep. And gather everyone around and rejoice like the angels who are in heaven. Can we help you do that this morning? If you're lost and you know you need to find the Father's home, why don't you come forward? Why don't you make it right? Why don't you let us help you?